Happy Gru Year, Carrington.
Very well put. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a bit of a sore throat, though. Alas. Winter in Canada, where sickness abounds. Oh. Just like in this game.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
Yep. Hmm. I will get better.
Okay. You know what might make you better? Hearing our lovely theme song.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
Nice segue, sir.
Thank you.
Well done. You're like a pro.
I know. I'm so good.
25 episodes in this and about 100 episodes in other things. We're starting to get good.
Starting. We played Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
My goodness, that title.
I know. So it started off as a joke.
Apparently. It started off as a joke? Like the title did?
The title started off as a joke. Apparently, Steve Maritsky, they had a whiteboard or chalkboard or whatever they used back in that day, listing all the Infocom games, and he wrote, just snuck in the list, Leather Goddesses of Phobos, as a funny, and eventually it became an actual game.
That is very hilarious.
Yeah, that's what I learned.
And that's all I learned.
That's all I got. And that's the episode. Want to read some mail?
I do want to read some mail. Okay, well done, you. How did you know? Let me look up where we've got notes. I took notes. We got email from people.
And I
wrote some down. What did I write down that we got that I liked? We got one from Herb that says, "Hello, sailors. I am, of course, addressing Kevin and Carrington. I have yet to read this on any of these sorts of sites, so I thought I would throw it on the altar for dissection, so to speak." Spoiler from Zork One's Loud Room and other spoiler from Zork 3's Twin Sentinels, are odd, flippant solutions to elaborate puzzles whose intended solutions are much more satisfying when employed, but they did indeed serve a purpose. They are simply shortcuts or backdoors that allowed the overburdened implementers to circumvent otherwise complex and time-intensive solutions to puzzles in order to get on to the next part of the game they needed to code. They were aware of how difficult, or at least intricate, these puzzles were to solve. But once they had completed coding them, they had better things to do during unit testing than plod through the elaborate processes required to get to the next stages of those games. Thus, they coded backdoors to allow themselves to pull it off quickly and thus move on. Those backdoors could have been removed before publication, but remained in the games, and why not? They created alternate solutions, and alternate solutions enhance the mystique, right? And when players like me decide to commit to another playthrough, we're grateful for their decisions to leave them in place. I, for one, say thanks. Oh, and Kevin, wasn't the 3D maze Fweep in Sorcerer rather than Zork 2? I love your podcast. Infocom games are what not so gently thrust me into my career, programming. Thanks to both of you for leading me back down this lane of memories.
Herb may know what he's talking about. He may be an expert in this thing, and he may know exactly how these games were developed. I do not. However, I think he is wrong. coming from my corner of ignorance.
I like it.
And my corner of ignorance and wild guessing, I don't think he's right about having easy ways to get through puzzles, because... they must have had easy ways to get through puzzles or to jump to a certain room or something, but I don't think it was by typing silly little phrases. I think that if they had, these games would be filled with them. Like, filled with things. And a couple, like saying a silly phrase in Zork 3 or a one-word thing to get out of a puzzle in Zork 1, the games would have 50 of these sort of things if that was why they were there.
Well, some puzzles are very easy, so I could see how perhaps there would not be ways around certain things. But you're right, whenever I've coded something like this, if there was something that had a prerequisite, like say there's a puzzle that you require a certain object to solve, I would no doubt during bug testing have a way to summon that object and also get rid of that object so I could test I'm in the room with it, I'm in the room without it, etc. Although at the same time, I think he's right about like the advantage and like that these are alternate ways to do it. Like we talked about the one solution past the spoiler fence last week about one solution that just seemed, you know, ridiculous and impossible to me that anybody would know it. But I think you were correct in saying, well, that it was actually like, in a sense, almost an Easter egg, like an alternative way to do it. There was the hard way to do it. And then there was this other thing you could do. And I do think it's right. And that there is an advantage and a kind of a joy to having those Easter egg things, which probably are there to appeal to the hardcore gamers or people that are going to do multiple playthroughs or what have you. I can see the appeal in creating it that way. But I think you're right that almost certainly in development, there would have been a way to jump to certain locations to summon certain objects or people or get rid of them or make changes or move in a direction you're not supposed to be able to move just for testing purposes. Somebody must know this. Somebody must be listening to our podcast who has more knowledge than us. Because I am with you in the corner of no knowledge, or whatever you call it.
Right.
That corner.
And there were a couple of puzzles, at least one puzzle, in Leather Goddesses of Phobos that had more than one solution.
Were there? Cool.
Yes.
I wonder if I found any.
And one of them was sort of hidden away, but you could find it. And I found the way to do it the hard way. And then after I'd done it, I discovered through...
Cheating.
Puzzle mechanics.
Cheating. You're looking for cheating.
No, not through. No, actually, not one of the. I did not cheat for that one. I discovered an easier way to do it that was sort of just spelled out in code. So.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool. I want to discuss that then when we get over the.
Sure. I will make a note.
I solved some codes in this. I solved some ciphers in this one.
Yes.
I'm a cipher solver.
Cipher solver. I will read a message from. William Rice. Longtime listener here. I finally wanted to write again about Zork 3 since I just downloaded it and have yet to hear your review. I've been playing Infocom games since I was 16, and I'm 50 now! Exclamation point. So I think that pretty much puts me in the demographic. Yes, sir, it does. I had been reading reviews of Infocom when I got my first computer, an Atari 600XL.
Boo.
Yay! It took another year or so until I finally upgraded RAM and got a disk drive so I could finally play these games. My parents got me my first two games for Christmas. They were Zork 3 and Deadline. Yikes. In retrospect, it would be hard to get a worse start, but I enjoyed them all the same. After 34 years, I have still not solved the Deadline murder, so it's definitely a cold case. We played that one, right? That was the mystery.
Yep.
We have played. There's two others we haven't played yet. I had more fun with Zork. To be honest, I didn't make much headway, and the scoring was pretty opaque, but I enjoyed exploring around and trying different things. Years later, I found a walkthrough, and I was quite glad I didn't waste too many more years in the Royal Puzzle. I never would have solved that one. Also, the complicated, I'll say it, box puzzle. But by the time I got to the puzzle, I had given up completely and pretty much followed the walkthrough. Perhaps I would have enjoyed it more had I played the first two Zorks first, but for me, it was just too difficult and opaque. Fortunately for me, things picked up after those two, since my third game was Hitchhikers. I also made it very far in that one, got the Babelfish and all that, but needed help at the very end. If you want your letters read, please don't say spoilery things. I have since played many of the games. My absolute favorites were the entire Enchanter series, yes. Suspended, Witness, saw that one, Planetfall, nice. And Hitchhikers. Yeah, I'm really enjoying the podcast, and you guys got me to finally play Ballyhoo, which I also liked a lot. I try to play games I haven't tried before now, but unfortunately I find I lack the patience to get through them. I am avoiding the spoiler fence for unsolved games, which is why Deadline is not done yet. Anyway, thanks for reading my ramblings, and thank you for the excellent podcast. I also enjoy the Atari podcast, but I'm hopelessly behind on that one. Merry Christmas and best wishes for 2019.
What a nice email. When he brought up, it's so funny, we've played a bunch of these games now. So when he brought up playing Ballyhoo, I'm like, oh yeah, I loved Ballyhoo. Awesome. Kind of forgot all about it. And I'm like, oh, that was one of the really good ones. I thought it was really
fun. It was.
Yeah.
And Phobos reminded me of Ballyhoo in some ways, and just kind of humor level and kind of tone a little bit. I don't know. Circus in Space.
I got an email that I think might have been sent to me. It's a listener from another podcast I do, Rebecca. Yeah, it looks like it was sent to me. This is, if I wanted to play Infocom games with a pinch of nostalgia but not go all the way to using actual old computers, do you have a recommendation about which is the best vintage computer emulator to use on a modern computer? Now, I wrote back saying, generally, I just recommend people go to archive.org because you can play a lot of things just online. There's so many things they have now where you just...
You don't need to install an emulator and
don't install anything.
And,
like, just like click on a game and it's now playing in your browser. And that is just like the sweetest way to dip your toe in, and you don't have to do anything but have a web browser. So archive.org and go search for stuff. So that's the thing I generally recommend. I wrote back to ask, well, are you looking for a particular computer to emulate? And which computer are you on? But I haven't heard back yet. I can say from personal experience, my favorite emulator to use on a Macintosh, a modern Mac, to emulate old Apple II computers is something called Virtual 2. And it's just an unbelievably good emulator. It emulates even the sound of putting a floppy disk in. And like just it's so good and so accurate.
That's the one I use too. To be really good, you need to pay for it, and it's absolutely worth paying the shareware fee. But however, that might not be what someone who just wants to dip their toe and have a little bit of nostalgia, it might not be worth it for that.
I think so too. If you just want to play some games, if you're going to do any like vintage development, pick up Virtual 2. If you're going to do Apple II stuff, I don't know. Like there's Apple Win, I think it's the Windows one. The Virtual 2 is just Mac only. I feel like old Mac things, I know of Mini VMac. That's the one that I use. And there's DOSBox and CPC.
DOSBox is great. Yeah.
Like DOSBox, if you're looking to play old PC games, the DOSBox is totally the way to go.
And all the Infocom games were PC games. Mm-hmm. If you like that look, the aesthetic, I mean, if that font gives you a little warm fuzzy in your tummy, then that's the way to go.
And the only other one I know that's kind of big and popular is Vice. I don't use it because it's a Commodore emulator and it's Windows only. So both of those leave me out, particularly the former one. But if you're looking for like C64 or better, whatever.
Vice is available for the Mac.
Oh, wow. Okay. But it's still a Commodore emulator, so I don't
care. That's true. Yeah. There's been a few times when for archiving I've had to use Vice, and it is a solid emulator.
Yeah, I've heard only really good things about it. So if you want to do C64 or VIC-20 things or PET things or whatever.
And you shouldn't, because Commodore boo, but if you do...
Oh, but speaking of old computers, let's derail this for a second. And I saw on Twitter that you're going to go to like a week-long Atari thing in Germany. First of all, since when does Atari get to have week-long things? So that was an Apple thing. Well, we invite some of you Apple people to Kansas Fest for a couple of years, and now you're ripping off our thing.
So Fujiyama is a yearly Atari thing. This will be the 20th one. In Germany, they have annual Atari things. Like they have like five of them, and you know, the crazy European countries where Atari was huge, Poland, that sort of thing. And so I have decided that I'm going to go this year, and so I'm going to go to Kansas Fest and get my Apple II on, and then a month later or so, I will be going to Germany to get my Atari on.
That is awesome. I got to say, that is amazing. I love Kansas Fest is one of my favorite things of the year. So like these like multiple day vintage computer festival things. Like if you're into Infocom, mm-hmm. frankly, dear listener, then you're probably into old computery type things, and pick your platform of choice and go seek one of these things out. It is so much fun. Like just a highlight of my year going to Kansas.
Yeah. And there's a great one for TRS-80 people that I haven't been to, but I've heard great things. And I think it's like a 2-day thing. What's it called? TRS-80 Assembly. I'm pretty sure there's a Commodore one. Find a group of people and hang out for a couple of days. It's really good.
Yeah, there is an annual, I think they call it like the 20th annual of the last yearly, I don't know, some last annual thing. Every year they call it the last one for the Cocoa or something, Cocoa Fest. That's right. One I've been wanting to go to. But like all of them just look fun. All the things like that I go to are super fun. So dear listener, if it sounds appealing, then seek them out. They're awesome.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
When are we going to start the, we need a Eaten by a Gru, like Affinity Cruise or something.
We totally do. We need Gru Cruise crazier.
I like it.
Joko Gru's crazy.
I got an email, I don't think you got this one, from buddy Ken Gagne, and he said, forgot how I came across this page. Maybe it was one of you, but I don't think it was. Have you heard of this publication? And he sent me a link to classicadventurer.co.uk. I'll put a link in the show notes. And it's a bookazine called The Classic Adventurer. It's dedicated to the golden era of text adventures. They've done 4 issues. They do a lot of interviews with people who made the games, and they're beautifully designed. You can read all 4 issues for free. Download the PDF, either for your desktop or mobile-friendly versions. I opted to throw a few dollars at getting paper versions, which are print on demand, and I'm looking forward to receiving those. So the Classic Adventurer.
Are you saying that Ken wrote that he opted to throw money at it?
Ken told me about it. I don't know how he read it. I opted to throw money at it. It's because I like holding it. If I download the issues, I will never read them. They will sit on my hard drive until I'm dead. If I have a paper something that I can, you know, read in bed, or
it will keep you alive forever. The secret now know.
Yes, the magazine, the pictures, the magazine get older and older, or something.
Some weird sort of vintage publication Dorian Gray thing going on here.
Exactly.
So what else do we get? We got an email from Tim saying, just a quick note to thank y'all for, I like good use of y'all, again for what you do. You helped me revisit my childhood in an extremely fun way. On my trusty Atari 800, boo, it was always Infocom, Scott Adams, Brian Howarth, British, and Level 9, also British, adventures that kept me up at nights. Of course, none of them could compare to Infocom. I may have gushed at you before, but I wanted to add a hearty thank you for the Trisbort information. How freaking cool. One of the problems with having a crappy attention span is I don't map. Never did. So it was just luck that I got anywhere. This thing makes me want to map. In fact, I am now mapping Mysterious Adventures 8 by Brian Howarth, and I have already gotten further than I ever did. Speaking of, I was amazed at how short a shrift you gave to the freaking something puzzle in Zork 3. I guess we can talk about wall puzzle in Zork 3. I had to get hints back in the day to get through that freaking thing. Again, probably a mapping lack. Back in the 80s, hints were not easy for a teenager to come by either. I'm amazed I ever beat any of the games. I remember Trisbort. That's the one that does the auto mapping or something, right? Or was the we talked about?
I think you talked. What's so you?
I talk about
his sports short attention span. Okay, I found a link to it in the show notes after last episode, and I don't remember you talking about it. I know I didn't talk about it because I'd never heard of it before. So I thought maybe
a listener talked about it.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't always listen to what you're talking about because I'm researching something or distracted thinking about what I'm going to talk about next. And so I don't know where this came from. Maybe someone snuck into our show notes and added Trisbort. But this seems to be an interactive fiction mapper. Like I said, maybe this was discussed last episode, but I didn't hear it. Interactive fiction mapper, and it's only for Windows. So yeah, why would you talk about it? You don't use Windows.
Maybe I mocked it. No, I think I remember Trisbort because I remember even thinking I said it incorrectly. Remember afterwards thinking, did I say Trisbot?
There's no Mac or Windows version, so I will never use it.
Well, that's
I'm sorry. There's no Mac or Linux version. I misspoke.
I did like that he mentions Level 9. I've heard a lot of things about Level 9 adventure games, so they have been on my list of things I want to play for a while. But this Brian Howarth was new to me, so I will go seek out and add to my long list of things I want to play.
Excellent.
So thank you in return, Tim. You're throwing good info at me, presumably.
Yeah. Is it, though?
Is it?
Let's see. Oh, you just read this one. I think that's about it for
that's enough. That's good. We can read the same things again next week, apparently.
Oh, excellent. Next week? We're doing this weekly now?
Oh, right. I'm sick, man. Leave me alone.
I'm sorry. I'm terrible. I'm a terrible friend. So we played Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Leather Goddesses.
Mm-hmm. It was released in September 1983. I said that wrong. I'm saying wrong things too. Yes, they released The Goddesses in September 1986. In the category, it was comedy. It's credited to Steve Moretzky.
If I remember from our wonderful presentation in Kansas Fest.
Oh, that was so good.
86 is right at that. Things are about to go wrong. Like, I think this game did very well.
Yes.
And it was their last really big hit, I think. Absolutely. The next couple of years are crumbling sales.
All true. It was Infocom's, according to Wikipedia, which is never wrong.
Never.
It was Infocom's best-selling game in 1986 with 53,500 copies sold, which is more than 50% greater than Trinity, which might be their best game. Not best-selling, but best game. It was the same year that Trinity was released. So
okay, so you're saying you think it's their best game, or Wikipedia thinks it's their best game?
Trinity is perhaps, in my opinion, perhaps the best game that we have played. Maybe.
That's interesting that you say that, because I think it's the one I would pick as well. I've been wondering if at the end of this whole shenanigans, we would be able to do,
a draft or what's your favorite or whatever.
But it's interesting that we're both leaning towards the same favorite. We'll see if that changes.
Yeah, might be. Anyway, so let me repeat more clear.
You're doing very well at that.
Trinity and Leather Goddesses were released the same year, 1986. And Leather Goddesses did 50% better than Trinity. The company eventually sold a total of about 130,000 copies, which was three times as many as any other after Activision bought them. The game, however, was Infocom's last to sell more than 100,000 copies. So like you said, it was their last gasp. It was their sixth best-selling game overall. I think what the selling point of this game was sex.
Sex.
Yeah.
Leather sex. Like a dirty sort of game. Comes out after, so it's 86, it's coming out after soft porn then.
Yes.
But before Leisure Suit Larry, because I think that's 87.
I believe you are accurate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because in playing this game, I thought it was influenced by Leisure Suit Larry. So some of my notes are clearly incorrect.
Maybe Leisure Suit Larry was influenced by this.
Maybe.
But Leisure Suit Larry was influenced by soft porn.
Yes.
Definitely. So, I will talk about the box a little bit. It says the box is great. Everything about the packaging.
The box is really great.
Yeah, everything about the packaging and the feelies that came with this game is particularly Infocom and on point.
And was refreshing coming off of Zork 3, where I thought, you know, that kind of let me down. I know it was a really early game, but I was like, oh boy, the packaging and feelies for this are not great.
Yeah.
This is the exact opposite. This is a return to really great packaging.
Absolutely. They seemed like they put it all on the table. They went all in with this one. Box, the cover says Leather Goddesses of Phobos, and there's like a futuristic space energy station or something on a planet, and it's very 50s,
like B-movie kind of stuff, pulp.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. It says with alluring 3D and sensational scratch and sniff, it's very cool. And it says, and now the exciting episode of Humanoids in Space. How did you, a regular at Joe's Bar in Upper Sandusky, Ohio, end up on a Martian moon? Can you prevent the hideous space creatures from abducting the naked heiress? Why does Scratch and Sniff number 2 smell so familiar? How many uses can you find for a rubber hose? Is it easy to remove a brass bikini? Is it hard to outsmart a robotoid sumo wrestler? Can you stop the Leather Goddess's fiendish plan to turn all Earthlings into sex slaves? Learn the answers to these burning questions in Leather Goddesses of Phobos, Infocom's a racy spoof of 1930s Pulp Fiction. But first, a word from our sponsor. Why put up with only one playing mode when you can have three? That's right, three. So whether your tastes run to tame, suggestive, or lewd, Leather Goddesses of Phobos can satisfy you. That's my best radio.
It was excellent.
Oh my God.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that was the back of the box. And the good the stuff in it. So good.
Now, and the box is not lying. It does indeed come with a scratch and sniff card.
Yes, it does. It's so good.
Sensational. So
I want to talk about, do you have it? Do you have the?
No, feelies? I don't. Alas, I had no actual feel. I only had PDFs of feelies.
Yeah.
Which is too bad because this is one of the ones I would have liked to have had. I would have liked to have had the scratch and sniff.
This PDF of scratch and sniff is not as good as the actual scratch and sniff.
Nope. And also had I had a PDF of the 3D glasses that came in it.
Right.
Now, work as well.
You know, I didn't do it. The PDF of the 3D comic book, which we'll talk about, it's got the red and green, and I was going to go grab some anaglyph glasses and see if it worked. I don't see why it wouldn't. Why a PDF of 3D should still be, but I didn't do it. So
I would like to thank you for the word anaglyph, because it's been driving me crazy trying to remember for like the last week. I'm like, what is the word? It's going to come up. It's the word for this when you do the stereo photographs. What is that? Anaglyph. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well done, you. I learned a word, but not during the game. This was the moment that I relearned that word. Excellent.
Thank Excellent. Good. So, yeah, the stuff that it came with, it came with a comic book in 3D, The Adventures of Lane Mastodon, number 91, and glasses, 3D, you know, glasses to watch, that you watch, look at it. Of course, the standard cheap cardboard red and green glasses.
And it's Lane battles the shameless leather goddesses.
Yes. I thought it was super clever, really well done comic. Set a lot of the stage for the game and gave some use in a very Infocom sort of way, has some very useful tips in there for actually getting through the game. In a sort of
more than even just useful, like things that you would, this is one of the ones where they're clearly using this as copy protection. Like it's got some stuff in here that you require this comic to play this game or to finish the game anyway. Like you'll never solve some things without the info from the comics, Infocomics.
Right.
But more than that, it also very much sets the tone of, you know, childish sort of bodiness and whiz-bang 1930s pulp stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the game has the exact same sort of tone and flow that the comic does. So the comic is both essential reading for the game, but just like some other things we've done, it leads you right into the game. Like, you read the comic, and then you're immediately in the right frame of mind to start playing the game. So it really accomplishes its goal well, I think.
Absolutely. Unless you're me and you start playing the game without reading the comic first, and then you're halfway through the game going, like, I'm really stuck. Maybe I should go back and read that comic. And it turns out to be super helpful. A tangent here. I noticed in the first or second page of the comic, it says, you know, the art by Richard Howell and 3D process by Ray Zone. And I was just like, that's interesting. I'm going to look that up. And I figured Ray Zone was a company that does that. And Ray Zone, I learned, was known as the king of 3D comics. And he spent his career doing printed 3D. And this was relatively one of the earliest things he did. You know, only 2 or 3 years into his career of doing 3D comic books and and movies and whatever. And anyway, they got him early, and he sort of cut his teeth on this, it seemed like. So,
well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, interesting tangent. Looking up Raison. You want to talk about the other stuff that came in the box?
Yeah, there was also a map. Or in fact, two maps. Mm-hmm. And I presumably, looking at the PDF, I bet this came double-sided. I think it's probably two sides of the same page is mm-hmm. what it looks like to me. And it's a map of the lower level. Well, one of them is a map of the lower level of the secret catacombs. And the other one is a map of the very lower level of the secret right. catacombs. Because you can indeed go up and down in the secret catacombs.
Yes. And this was a maze in the game, which without this map would have been intolerable.
Absolutely intolerable, because these passages are more twisty than one can imagine.
Yes.
It's very much you leave a room going southeast and you will end up in another room, but to go back, you'd have to go
and it's a, up. And it's a two, like you said, it's a two-level maze and you've got to go up and down between the levels. It would have been an intolerable, cheat-worthy maze without this map. However, with the map, and it's not
and the comic.
And the comic, mm-hmm. The maze ended up being fun. I did it.
Yep.
Yeah. And it required, you know, you're kind of looking at the map, and it kind of would have been easier if it was on paper instead of a PDF for me, but I didn't print it out. You're kind of looking at the map, figuring out where you are in this map, and some of the map isn't actually entirely accurate, you know, because anyway, it was good. I did the maze. I didn't hate it. And because because of this map was in there. So that was
100%. And I had the exact same experience. Even my notes, I know somewhere in my notes here, it talks about how this is a maze I would have hated to the point where I probably would have wanted to quit this game if I didn't have this map. But I didn't feel like I was cheating, because it's a map that comes with the game. This isn't like you're getting a hint book and getting the map. This is part of the feelies. And clearly, again, done as a copy protection thing, because they've basically made a map that would be, or a catacombs that would be almost impossible to navigate if you didn't have this map. Like, it would have just taken forever of trial and error, entering every room from every direction and leaving it from every direction and figuring out what would have been just a nightmare of unfun. But as it was, it's an interesting sort of, I mean, there's a lot of the kind of, you know, it's the same room over and over again, but there's things you have to do to avoid the various sorts of beasties and stuff in it, things that you can learn from the comic, and all stuff we can talk about on the other side of the spoiler fence. And I found it was kind of fun to like have the map. I ended up printing them out. So I printed them out, had them beside me so I could write on them, and it was neat. And I actually didn't mind the map, didn't mind the maze, the catacomb thing at all. And it was neat to solve, all because you're given the mate. Like, it's such a different experience when you have a map in front of you and you don't feel like it's just like I gave up, so I went and downloaded a map.
Right.
Like, it's part of the box. It's just part of the game. It's fair mm-hmm. play. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And the other thing that we alluded to was it comes with a scratch and sniff card, which I could not sniff, but I could look at. And very cool. It's got seven circles on it with kind of alien. It's got numbers, just regular Arabic numbers on it, but they look a little alien on it. And then, I guess, in different colors, and you could scratch and sniff them. The game, at least the version of the game I played, after it told you scratch and sniff number two or whatever, it told you what the smell was. So, I liked that. And if your card was lost or was a PDF, then it would say, "Oh, this smells like cologne," or whatever it was. So,
I didn't have a scratch and sniff card.
No, me neither.
Also, I will talk about it later. But the game, mm-hmm. I guess, while you're playing the game, it's supposed to tell you, you know, scratch number three.
Yes.
But it never did for me.
Really.
Yeah.
What version of the game did you play?
Just like last time, I played using my new fave in Pitch Dark on Apple II. So, which, like, once you've got it set up, which, I mean, was very easy to set up, really. You just download a file, and since I've got what's called a CFFA 3000, it's a little USB thingy you can put in a vintage Apple II, and then you can put just image files on a USB thing and then just boot to them. So, super simple. So, because of that, there's essentially no setup. If you got the kind of vintage computer I have. I just put it in and done. With that already set up and sitting on my desk, I'm like, well, how else am I going to play it? I'm just going to go over to that. And it's a really enjoyable way to play it. So I played in that. I don't know if maybe that's a bug in... I should send a thing off to 4AM, I guess, saying, like, I played Light of the Goddesses, and at no point did it even mention... And I kept... When I was playing the game, it would talk about odors in the game. It would say, you're in this room. And I kept thinking, well, is this giving me a hint? But it... Like, so for you, like, how did it tell you? Does it literally say scratch number three?
It said, you know, scratch number three. Yeah, that was it. And then in the next paragraph, it says, like, you know, you smell the scent of cologne or whatever it was.
Yeah, never once did that say that to me in the whole game. And I played the whole game.
In fact, at one point, I don't remember. I didn't copy paste the text, but it said, you know, scratch and sniff number four, whatever it was. And it was in a situation where you're in a bad place. Things are smelly and gross. And it was just like, you know, you smell. And it was something not that gross. I don't remember now. We'll call it pickle juice. And it was just like, you know, you smell the terrible smell of pickle juice. And it said, like, you should feel lucky. We had all sorts of terrible smells available to us.
You didn't get that? All that.
Nope. Ah, that's weird. No, it was one of the funny. It was just like, you know, the company that gives us the scratch and sniff gave us a catalog of terrible smells, and we could have used them, but we didn't. We went with pickle juice. So there's a couple versions of this game, and maybe that is where our difference comes from. I noticed in Zoom, I played on the Zoom emulator on my Mac. There were two versions of Leather Goddesses of Phobos. There was, I think, one of the earlier versions, and then there was the solid gold version. And the solid gold was kind of the re-release versions that they did a few years later. I think they came out on CD-ROM. And I chose that version because there's higher chances of bugs being fixed. And although sometimes the solid gold versions introduce bugs, but there's built-in hints to those. I mean, the Invisi Clues are actually part of the game. Excuse me, part of the game. So,
well, the Invisi Clues are built into Pitch Dark too. So I had those.
That's true. You did.
Yep. So. Mine was, I wrote it down, or I copied it. No, I guess I wrote it down. Release 59, serial number 860730. It's the default in Pitch Dark. It has multiple versions of the game. Like, I could have picked a different version of the game. I just played whatever the default was.
Sure.
I got what I got.
Interesting. Well, I'm sorry you missed out on the opportunity to know.
Yeah, I didn't have the scratch and sniff thing anyway.
So. Sure. Yeah. I didn't mean either, but it's a fun. I they threw all this super fun stuff into the game. There's scratch and sniff. There's 3D comic books. There's, you know, if you use the Invisi Clues, there was Invisible Ink. It's all like the fun things that are, you know, secret spy stuff. And
which are also things that you want from Infocom. Like, when you think of Infocom games, it's also be in your mind and it's just text. And so what you get are the feelies and the browsy and the included stuff. And this is a game that totally delivers for those. This is one of the best packaging things we've done. The feelies are both interesting and fun and funny, but incredibly appropriate to the game and the feel and the theme of the game. Yes. And they tie in so well. Like, it's just pitch perfect packaging.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm just testing the pop filter on my microphone.
There's been a couple times we played games where the packaging was not thematically the same as the game. Like, and
there was something where the packaging was really funny, but the game was not. I don't remember which one it was. Yeah. But this one, they fit so well together.
Yeah.
And also, it's really good. Like, the packaging is just so good. Oh, there's also a thing in the browsy where there's a coin. It says, this coin is worth $225,000. And you can get a Xylon or a Zorkmid.
And right.
It talks about being the coin ad collector in the comic book?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an ad. Which fits, like, old comic book ads and stuff. And you get a free giant Venus flytrap with it, which ties into stuff in the game. And it's just fun. Everything about it is just so well done. The comic is so good.
Yes, absolutely. Another cute thing. I didn't play the MS-DOS version, but if you do, that version had a boss key in it. A boss key used to be a thing. Gather around, children, when I tell you a story.
exactly. Oh, yeah, I guess a lot of people, if you're younger, you wouldn't even know what this is.
The boss key used to be a thing in games where you'd hit a special key combination and the game would instantly go away and probably be replaced by something that looked like you were working, like
usually a spreadsheet.
A spreadsheet. And this game had that. I think it was Control B, and it would throw up a boss key picture, which was I will put a screenshot of what it looked like in the show notes. But basically, it looks like a spreadsheet. It looks specifically like a spreadsheet done in Cornerstone, which was Infocom's. Cornerstone was Infocom's ill-fated spreadsheet database app. So, at a quick glance, it looks like you're working in a spreadsheet. If you actually go to read what's in the spreadsheet, it's a list of, it's inappropriately adult, basically. it's a list of sexy things that you can buy for happy fun times with your loved one and where to get them. So yeah, kind of funny.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's worth clicking the link and reading them. Kind of. Let's see, what else do I want to tell you? So at the end of the game, just quickly want to mention, it mentions, I don't like when Infocom does this, but it ended the game with an advertisement for the next game, which was supposed to be Leather Goddesses of Phobos 2, Gas Pump Girls Meet the Pulsating Inconvenience from Planet X.
Which is, I mean, if anything, a better title than even the first one. The yes. Pulsating Inconvenience is so good.
Right. So Infocom never released that. However, Infocom, in quotes, did release it. The sequel did come out, published by Activision, using the Infocom name. It was also written by the sequel was also written by Steve Moretzky, but the sequel is one of the titles that is not considered a canonical Infocom game.
Yeah, because it's after Infocom. The word still exists, but it's got really nothing to do with the original, other than Activision owns the brand.
Right, Activision owned the brand. Moretzky wrote it. The sequel was a graphical game.
It's supposed to be horrible too.
I think so. Yeah, and I don't know if you and I will ever play the non-Infocom games or not. But yeah, that's what I read too. Is it was not well reviewed. Yeah.
Whenever people mention sequels that get talked about and not actually produced, I always immediately just think about Buckaroo Banzai against the World Crime League. So.
I had not heard of that.
Yeah, that was at the end of the Buckaroo Banzai movie. It says returning.
I guess I
Buckaroo Banzai against the World Crime League. I love Buckaroo Banzai so much.
I forgot about that. I think it's been a long time since I've seen it. And there was a planned title of a third game, which was never started, never released, called, it's a terrible name, Diesel Dykes of Deimos. Diesel Dykes of Deimos. Yeah. So, good thing you guys didn't come out with that, because I don't know, didn't like it. So can we talk about the sexiness part of the game?
Yes. Well, first, okay, which... version, you can play on three different versions, tame, lewd, or what was the third one?
Suggestive. Tame, suggestive, or lewd were the three naughtiness levels of the game.
I forgot to set that. So I played the first half of this game on suggestive, and I'm probably the only person who's ever played any chunk of this game on anything other than lewd. And then I started switching back and forth because then I remembered that that existed. But the first half of the game, I forgot to do anything, and I just played on suggestive.
Interesting. I started off in lewd mode because, of course.
Because, of course.
I did several of the things, like after a sexy time happened in the game, I went back and usually did it once or twice more in the other modes.
Wow, look at you being all... I didn't do that, but I did switch back and forth. I played a whole bunch of it on tame. Like I switched all over the place.
I feel like, okay, the sexiness, the naughtiness of this game is probably a big selling point. I felt like the few paragraphs that involve sex were the least interesting, most banal parts of the game.
Mm-hmm. It is not a, like, porno game. Like, this isn't a game where, like, when you play on lewd mode, it's all just everyone's getting it on. In fact, one of the funniest things in this game is if you type score, like, very, very early on.
Yep.
Like, one of the first things I did was type score. And then in most games, it would say, you know, your current score is 50 out of
right.
five or however you're doing.
100 or whatever it is. Yeah.
But instead it says score. It assumes you mean like with the person you're with. I think I was with the bartender score. It says, you know, with bartender. So, and it says like, no, like the bartender doesn't get sent. Like you can't score right. with the bartender. And if you're ever on your own, it just says there's no one here to score with. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. To get the score in this game, you actually type status.
Yeah. So I thought that was very funny. That's a good
that
use
was
of
funny.
Score.
That was, it was, yeah. it was, that was cute. But no, really, I, as much as I really enjoyed this game, the sexy bits felt like they were written by or for 15-year-olds. And I don't know. I felt like I enjoyed the game in suggestive and or tame mode even more than...
Yeah, I also totally understood all the sex parts. No, but I completely agree. Like, I would dip into the lewd mode, but I found, frankly, I enjoyed the game more without the mode. Like, you know what? It's just... The humor here isn't... There's a lot of other things. There's some very funny sentences in this game. Most of my... All the really, really funny things are not the sexy stuff. It's other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think people might have, I don't know, come for the sex, but stay for the very funny text and enjoyable plot. Fun. This game is basically, it reminded me a lot of
Hitchhikers for me.
I was gonna. No, what's the one? I'm sorry, where the uncle died and you have to.
Hollywood Hijinks.
This reminded me a lot of Hollywood Hijinks, and it's basically a treasure hunt. You've got to find the eight things, and yeah, there's basic puzzles on the way, and you know they're. Whatever, Zork is a treasure hunt, but rather than searching for valuable artifacts, you're searching for this random list of it's a scavenger hunt. This random list of things that you need to find, and they're scattered around in some place. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense why a thing is in a certain place, but it doesn't matter. You did the puzzle, you found the thing, and so that's kind of what the game really is. I thought the descriptions of the text is funny, but the descriptions of places was very sparse. Didn't spend a lot of time setting the environment.
I think it was a
you.
Limitation because, like, in this game, we haven't talked about it, and I want to come back to some points you just made as well. I want to make an argument that it's more like Hitchhikers. Well, we're talking about why it reminded me of Hitchhikers.
Because this is a game where you can play... reference?
Well, okay, there's that. But this is a game where you can play either gender. At the very beginning, one of the first things you do, you start off in a bar, mm-hmm. and there's... You go into a bathroom and you can pick to either go in the
you've got a pee and it forces you to go into a
and
bathroom.
You pick one and that's how you pick your gender that you'll be in this game. I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. So you can play either as a guy that's or a girl. I played as a girl. I bet you did as well because sure. like why wouldn't you? Of course you do. Correct. And so I played the game as a lady and you pick whichever door you want to go into. I do have issues with kind of how it handles the gender stuff in this game. I want to talk about that. Also, yeah. I found a bug.
Well,
I found
good
a bug
for
in this
you.
Game. Way to go, me. I don't... of course you did. Well, we'll talk about the bugs we found. I'm very excited that I found a bug. This time, I'm really sure it's a bug. I was sure right up until I said that. We'll see. But maybe because of that, like, so there's a lot of locations for you to go to. There's, like... a bunch of, we'll talk about the number of objects and stuff, but it's certainly not a really teeny tiny confined map. And there's a whole bunch of words that are twice. Like when you play a lady in this game, a lot of the characters you interact with, like everything swaps their gender. Like, so other than the leather goddesses stay leather goddesses, I think. Like they didn't become leather gods for me.
Right.
But your sidekick is a lady. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because I was playing a lady. And if I was playing a guy, then the sidekick character you get will be a guy.
Yes.
And so because of that, like they're writing this game, and I think it's still in this period where they're trying to make it work on everything. So it's got to go and work on a ZX80. And I think that limitation probably made them have to, you got to cut back somewhere. And probably where they had to cut back was room descriptions.
Hmm. Perhaps. That might be that.
Yeah. So anyway, Hitchhikers. This is a funny game. Like, Hitchhikers is a funny game. It's also like a space game, and it's a wacky sort of space game. Very much Hitchhikers. But also, I barely had to map this game because you leap all over the place. One of the main conceits of this game is you start off in this little tiny bar, which is essentially two locations, and you're sucked up into space by the leather goddesses who are going to put you through a series of tests to determine the best way to enslave. It's all very vague, but somehow the thing you're doing is a way that would let them realize how to torture and enslave in a sexy way all of Earth, but you're going to break out and you're going to foil them. It's a very disjointed plot. But the nature of what you're doing is teleporting all over the place. Like, there's these circles, essentially, the gateways that you can leap from map to map and area to area. And a lot of the areas you leap into will have it would feel like I'd leap into a place that would have three locations.
Sure.
And you leap out. So it's a whole bunch of teeny tiny maps, in a sense, and then a couple of larger ones.
Which is very Hitchhikers.
That's very Hitchhikers. You're Hitchhikers right. was the same thing. You're leaping all over the place. So
that's
why while I was playing this game, it reminded me a lot of it. And I think that was also intentional. Hitchhikers was their massive big hit. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to say, we want to have the Hitchhikers plus sex. We need a big hit. And, that's got to have been in the back of everybody's mind.
Sure. You're right. In that way, with the way the map is laid out, with hyper jumping around or whatever it was very Hitchhiker-like. I also didn't need to use a map, which I enjoyed.
Mapped a couple of little bits, but that's it.
I had to keep a kind of a description of to get around from place to place. There are these black circles, and you hop on a circle, and different circles take you to different locations. And I had to eventually write down a list.
I did the same thing. I made a list of teleport.
It goes to there. Teleport you to which location.
Mostly because sometimes I'd be at a location and I want to get to another one, so I'd have to consult my list and say, okay, first, if I go there, I can teleport to location C, which lets me go back to location B or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah. Because you do move around a bunch in this. You'll revisit locations, and at least I did.
Yes. No, I think you have to. At least I had to. Yep.
So let's talk about the gender thing.
Yes.
So we both played as ladies.
Yes.
And in this game, it's like a sexy game.
Yeah.
So you're given one of the funniest things in this game. I don't know, is it a spoiler or not to talk about like what happens to your sidekick?
No, that's not a spoiler.
Your sidekick gets very early on horrifically killed, and I was like, what kind of a surprise? Well, that's weird. They just introduced, in my case, Tiffany. Mm-hmm. I think you get Trent or something if you're playing as a guy. So you get Tiffany. Right. Tiffany dies, and then very soon Tiffany will be back, and it's be like, oh, thank goodness there was that like wandering time traveler who had and this happens over and over. It's very funny. You'll be in a situation where somebody says, okay, you've got one guess. And if you can solve my, say, puzzle and you guess, then it's this. And Tiffany will say, oh, I know what it is. It's this. Wrong, killed, dead. And then 10 moves later, Tiffany's back. Oh, thank goodness there was that. Like, it's very funny. Like, you'll see Tiffany get, like, exploded and die. Like, distinctly a dead Tiffany.
Yes.
And yet every time, Tiffany comes back and it's very funny.
Yes. Yes,
it did. I like that a lot, actually, the killing of Tiffany.
That was really good. You mentioned the riddle. I cheat in these games, but the two things that I do not mind cheating at are traditional puzzles and riddles. I have no patience for either. And I tried answering the riddle like 10 times, and I eventually looked to some clues, to InvisiClues, to get hints, because I don't like them. I don't enjoy riddles. And there was like, am I wrong? You seem like a riddle kind of guy. I bet you solved it without cheating.
I am a riddle kind of guy, and yes, I solved it. Now, I had to look up other things. There's a bunch of things in here I did not solve, but that is one of the things I thought about for a bit. Didn't come to me instantly. It's not one of those ones. Like, it wasn't a riddle that I know. They're not reusing a Sphinx one or one of like the classic riddles you see all over the place. So I did have to think about it, like made myself a cup of tea, but it wasn't one of those next day things. Like, I just had to think about it for a bit. I'm like, I wonder if it's this. I'm like, oh my goodness, I got it.
I did like 10 things, and they all seemed reasonable to me. Like, this absolutely could have been a good answer to this thing, but it wasn't. So, you know, just die, and just... Anyway.
Well, Tiffany's answer, a cantaloupe or whatever, was wrong and got her killed. But it's okay, because Tiffany comes back. Tiffany always comes back. But here's one of the things I want to talk about, though. In this game, it's like a body game. It's a blue game. It's like it's a sex game in a sense. It's like a ribald thing, though, more than like porno game. It's that kind of thing, right? So it's fun and it's sexy in a pulpy sort of way. Yeah. Campy is a very good word for it. So, but there is like a sexiness to it, like, because it's the leather goddesses, and there's like, you know, at one point you're having a sword fight, and another person, this guy has been grabbed and is being slowly undressed by a tentacle monster, and the tentacle space monster is doing it. But I don't know. Maybe it's because I come to this with what's the male gaze. It strongly felt to me that, well, I liked the fact that you could play as a lady or a guy. Mm-hmm. So all games should do that. I like that. That is good.
Yes.
But I felt like I was still, they just gender swapped the pronouns, and I'm playing a very much guy sex game. Like maybe that's just me saying, well, all I can see are the male stereotypes of things. But it felt like I was playing a 15-year-old teenage boy stereotype sex game. I've got a female character. But everybody's going to act like we haven't swapped genders. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it still is the save the damsel thing. It still is the ladies are buxom damsels, and the guys are sweaty dudes and it's just so male gaze, like, the whole way through. And I kind of wished it was such an opportunity to do more of a switch. Like, I think that would have been fine if you played as the guy, because it's the whole stereotype of this kind of thing. But if you play as the lady, there are other sex stereotypes that could have gone with instead that would have been maybe a little more fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a missed opportunity.
I think you're right. I don't disagree with you. However, with certain things in the game...
It's also from 1986, so it was a thing of its time.
It was a different time. Certain things in the game, like the someone's being potentially molested by a tentacled monster, I took that in the spirit of a 1930s comic book, you know, or...
Which I think it was, but it seemed like a scene out of a lady being undressed by the tentacle monster, and you're the guy going to save her, and you swap the genders, and it didn't feel like, hey, we're going to do an undercutting of this with role reversal. It just felt like, well, we're just going to say that that one's male and this one's female and play the exact same scene.
The thing that bothered me from a woke 2019 perspective, because I'm so woke, you know, this game, like you said, this game was made in 1986, and most of the time, all of the sexy relationship stuff is one male and one female, and like there's one part where like something happens where you might be kissing someone who's female, and it's wrong, but you give into it anyway, and it's just like, oh, come on, you know, it gave me not feel good from a homosexual rights perspective. Yes. You know,
yeah, exactly. There was a few, there were, and I get that it is, it's like reading a text. We're reading a text that is of its time. Yeah. And the reason I notice things now that I would not have noticed in 1986, like I am a different person now. The world has gotten in these sorts of ways. I don't know if the world has gotten better. I just know that I have become a better person. Yeah. I've become much more aware because of the world has taken this long for the world to teach me some things, but I know that I am aware of things now and have a different outlook on stuff than I did in 1986. And so I was a different person. The game was a different game or whatever. If this game came out today, I'm sure it would handle these things differently, but that doesn't mean it's not something I think worth commenting. I just wanted to comment. I was like, okay, I like that you do both genders, but I still, this is serious male gay stuff, which I know is also part of it, but it's letting me swap genders. So let's try other things. And it's, you then deal with the genders differently, deal with homosexuality differently, deal with, you know, my tentacle monster love differently. Okay, so because of that, we should talk. Can we talk about my bug? I don't know if we can talk about my bug yet.
If bug it's not spoilery,
my bug's got to be in this. No, I think it's got to be on the side of the spoiler. I want to tell the world of my bug.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
I think it's going to have to be on the other side of it, alas. Okay, well, yeah, here's the thing then. Speaking of references. I think this. I spotted two things that I think are references in this game. One I'm sure of, and one I'm not so sure of. Mm-hmm. The Infocom reference I'm not so sure of. There's a spaceship in this game, unsurprisingly, being a space story.
Oh, you
game.
Just reminded me. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Not really. You were talking about the just regressive sex stuff. There's a spaceship in this thing that is shaped like a penis.
Described as a penis in the penis-y way.
Yes. I mean, they don't say in those words. But if you read the description of it, it is like a giant throbbing. It's a stuff hanging off the bottom. It's just like, see, that's the kind of thing where I'm just like, I was having fun with this game, and then you had to go and do that. You know?
Yeah, it does speak. It is fun, and then it crosses a bit into too puerile for me in those kind of things. Where I'm like, I find it pulls me out of the game. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, and then we let you let your 13-year-old son write some stuff for a bit, and I'm like, oh.
I learned a word this week, not from the game, but I'm going to talk about it. The word is bathos.
That's come up before.
Has it? Maybe you said bathos? It. Anyway, I relearned this thing, and it means the effect of anticlimax created by a lapse in the mood from the sublime to the trivial or the ridiculous. Hmm. And that thing with the penis-shaped spaceship was that for me. It just like, I'm here, I'm in the game, we're having fun, we're having fights out in outer space and blah, blah, blah. And then just, it became ridiculous, you know? And I don't know. So that was my...
Well, more than that,
yeah.
One of my favorite authors of all times is Alexander Pope.
Okay.
Guy who wrote in the early 1700s. It's like, and wrote some of the funniest things ever written, ever. He was a poet, and he was a short, nasty, like not attractive dude with the most cutting wit imaginable. Mm-hmm. And he wrote things like Rape of the Lock and Essay on Criticism, Essay on Man, just like hilarious, hilarious poetry that is just unbelievably biting. But he's the guy who coined the word bathos. Mm. Because it's from Perry Bathos, the art of sinking in poetry. Or as one of my professors called the art of stinking in poetry. He's always said it's like, and it basically was this poem that just like was making fun of other people writing poems at the time, like people he hung out with, rival. Like, oh, so funny. Anyway, he coined it to say, like, here's what you are all doing wrong. So, way to go, Alexander Pope.
Way to go, Alexander. Okay.
He used the phrase, what oft was thought but ne'er so well expressed, which often comes to mind. Like I'm like, yes, that's a good example of exactly what you're talking about. Like, he's just such a good writer. Anyway.
Okay, I interrupted you before. You were going to say something about the spaceship.
Was I? Oh, yeah, okay. So, on the spaceship, I think it's a reference in that, maybe, it's vague, but it reminded me anyway. All the directions when you're in the spaceship, mm-hmm. are presented in quotations. Sure. Like you can go, quote, north, because it's really just like a spin thing and we're just making it up. So you can go east, whatever. And they're just, okay, you can go, quote, east, quote, which really reminded me of Starcross. Because in Starcross, they're going to say, well, we're going to just call that aft and fore and whatever.
Right.
And it's, you know, a common idea in spacey type stories. But the first thing that came to mind was the way that's kind of used in StarCross. So I thought, oh, I wonder if this is kind of a reference to an earlier game in Infocom.
Hmm.
But the bigger one was, in my mind, I think there is a reference to The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. there's a the pocket of pocket of pocket is in this, which I'm positive is a reference to Walter Mitty. And I thought it was a good example of people of Moretzky's age in the 80s would be aware of Walter Mitty in the way that people today would not, I think. I think that's an example of something that would be hugely famous then and not so much now. A lot of people would have heard of Secret Life of Walter Mitty,
right?
And it was redone as a movie recently, but like right away I was like, pocket, 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 that's totally the sound from Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Hmm. And I'm positive that's a reference that the Infocom people and maybe contemporaries who were not teenagers in the 80s would have gotten, and I think would be probably lost on modern game players. So that was, because I wondered like how many other things are in there that are just completely lost on me. But that one I'm positive is a, when he does pocket a pocket a pocket a feep, that's totally a, the pocket apart is a reference. So
interesting.
Well, you know, that hasn't been completely lost on people.
I just found that in my notes where I wrote very, very Douglas Adams. So apparently I do agree with you.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You can be wrong and agree with Karen.
Great. Excellent. Yeah, there was some other stuff in there that was, I mean, definitely made sense then, but not now. I mean, there was a Jerry Falwell reference. There was an Ed Meese reference in the hints. So, yeah, it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. I want to talk about the stats real quick.
Hit me with stats.
The stats for this game are almost perfectly average. 85 rooms, 81 is average for Infocom game. Vocabulary of 978 or 976 is the average. 41 objects, a little more than the average of 36, and 22 ways to die.
I like our new ways to die thing.
Yeah. 30 is average, so a little low in the ways to die. But
I mostly died on purpose in this game. Like, you can anticipate deaths in this a lot, where something will happen. You're like, well, if I do that, it's going to kill me. So I would save and do it anyway because I want to see, like, well, what happens when it kills me.
Yeah.
And so, but most, some, I mean, I died not on purpose a few times.
Yeah.
But most of the time when I died on this, it's because I chose to save and do a thing that I was positive was going to kill me. Unlike a lot of other games, I die most often not anticipating it. So, right. Whereas this time, a few times I died, and a couple times I got myself in an unwinnable situation, which you can do in this game.
There's
which I was
one,
like, oh, darn it.
Yeah. No, there's one unwinnable situation in this game that you can't see coming, and then you don't know that it's unwinnable. Yeah, and I'll talk about that after the spoiler fence, but it's like the one, I think, really unfair. Unless if I understand things properly, it's the unfair aspect of this game in that you can get unwinnable and never know it. Yeah. Anything else before the spoiler fence?
I thought the game was. I disliked. Like, I'm really positive on this game. Like, my general impression is I found this funny and I found it fun. And I found the puzzles challenging, but mostly fair. Mm-hmm. It had a maze I actually really liked. Mm-hmm. It had some lines that I just wrote down a bunch of quotes because I found things, like, just funny lines.
Tell me a quote. I want to hear a quote.
Okay, so funny stuff. Something, here's a quote directly out of it. Something, possibly this very sentence, tells you that it would be very dangerous to travel east or west. Like, that is great. Like, that is such a good line. Possibly this very sentence. So there were a bunch of things like, at one point you're in the teensy weensy house and it says, this rickety home is so petite that the entire first floor is only one location in this story. When you tire of this floor, you can go east, southwest, or up. Like, that kind of stuff is very good. There's one line, but before you have a chance to ask the salesman, he points the flashlight upwards and a giant Venusian mega moth swoops down and carries him off. The other salesmen scatter like frightened salesmen. That's a good line. That's very Douglas Adams line.
Yes. Did you have the one about Cleveland? Did you copy and paste that one?
No. But you do go to Cleveland. This, you go to space. Yeah. You go to Mars. You go to Venus. You go to Cleveland.
Yes. Yes. It's like this particular part of Cleveland only has exits to the north and southwest. So good.
Lots of lines like that are so good. That said, there was some stuff to get this game I didn't like. is not a perfect game. It's not my favorite Infocom game. I didn't like the super puerile stuff. I would have actually liked it in a sense with less, this same game with less sex and or like less 13-year-old boy teenage heteronormative sex. Yeah. I would have liked better, to be honest. As a heteronormative guy, I'm like, that's too much, dude. So I didn't like that much as well, but the game is what it is. So like that's like complaining that there's too much fantasy stuff in Zork. Like that is the in a lot of ways the point of this game, and right. It sold well because of it. It was a smart move by Infocom, and it's still fun, and I like it. Some stuff I liked a little less, and I get that just like in Zork 3, where it feels like they're intentionally undercutting the expectations because it's like, oh, we've all done this before. Mm-hmm. Zork 3, it's like, you know what? The score's out of 7. Like, whatever. And just like, treasures, care about it, don't care about it, whatever. Like, they try to be kind of loosey-goosey with things because they're a little tired of doing stuff. Kind of weird in Zork 3 when it's your third or fourth game and the Infocom does, or I guess fifth game. Here, by 1986, they've done a bunch of these. I guess there's the idea that we all know that what's going on. But I found like, One of the main points of this is you're going up against the leather goddesses, and your helper, in our case Tiffany, because we're playing as ladies, says I can create a leather goddess foiling machine if you get me this list of 8 items.
She starts by describes herself as not smart. And then,
see, that rubbed me the wrong way because that was a thing that I thought was my sexism made it rub me the wrong way.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. But then she develops the thing that she is smart. She spends the whole time like thinking about stuff, and then.
But she also does stupid things that gets her killed. So I think that's where the not smart thing.
That's true.
Because she's constantly dying in dumb ways.
That's true. Okay,
but it just like there's some stuff like, which is kind of funny as a list that you need to get. I don't want to say what they are but you need to get a bunch of things. Yeah. But then the way you get some of these things is very nonsensical and mixes stuff the way the Zork game does, where it's like, it's science, but it's also fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's, you're going to do fairy tale stuff, like kiss the frog and you get a blender. And it's like, And so
yeah.
I would have liked it more if things were a little more
really
integrated.
Random.
Very random. Yeah. And I get that it's like, oh, we're just trying to be running. But okay, you could go random, but you also could have picked a thing that you would get from kissing a frog. Why don't you need a, the only way to do this is to get a wart on your tongue or something. I don't know. Like, you could have done something that is more frog oriented
right.
than the thing you actually get from the frogs. And so stuff like that. Like, and so it's got that mix of fantasy, fairy tale stuff and sci-fi, which always rubs me. I'm like, pick a genre, dude. But also, the leaping around from map to map, I found a bit disjointed, the same way I did with Hitchhikers, where I'm like, I'd rather kind of commit to a map, but it didn't bug me that much. It's just, it's the way the map is put together. But it seemed very, not really picaresque, but just disjointed. Like, you've got all these little pockets all over the place. And I kind of would prefer a little bit more coherence, and that the objects make a little bit more sense. That said, like, these are relatively minor problems in what I think is actually a very good and very fun and, pleasingly difficult game.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this game. I thought it was funny.
It was really funny.
Yeah. I thought it was clever, and yes, some of it seems like random silly ideas that these guys came up with and put into the game, and it doesn't always make sense, but I think coming like getting a blender from a frog, but I think just coming from, this is a comic book, we're living in a comic book, and mm-hmm. silly things are going to happen, I was able to roll with it. This was Hitchhiker-y, which is good. This was Hollywood Hijinks-y, which was fine. This was 90% of what I want in an Infocom game.
Oh, absolutely. It's way above the average. We've played a lot of the games that are not as fun as this, not as Infocom. This is like very almost archetypally Infocom-y. You know, it's like if I want to hand somebody a game to say, well, what's an Infocom game like? This. Yeah. It's got weird stuff. It's funny, amazing feelies, bizarro plot, a very satisfying ending, mm-hmm. neat puzzles that will just, bend your mind around them, but will be fun when you solve
them. Satisfying when you're done, yeah.
Absolutely. It's like checking all the Infocom boxes. The whole reason we wanted to do this whole thing and play these games is for stuff like this. I really, if every Infocom game was exactly like this, yes, we would miss some of the, I think, there are games that are better than this we've played, but this is way beyond the average. Half the games we played are not nearly as Infocom-y and satisfying as this one is.
Absolutely.
This is one of the definitive Infocom games, and I just, from packaging through final scene, it's really well done.
I say if everyone should play this game if you're into Infocom.
Yep.
Play it in tame or in the middle mode, suggestive. Is this a good first Infocom game? I say
yes.
I say yes,
yeah. And I wouldn't have thought so because it's definitely hard. It's way harder than playing Moon Mist, for instance, but so much more satisfying than playing Moon Mist. And I liked Moon Mist. But this is, and Moon Mist, you can play through like four times for the different colors. Well, you can play this one three times. Start on tame and work your way up to dirty.
And you
stuff.
Play it as a male and a female. So that's six times. Mm-hmm. You can play it. Six times.
It's even more game playthroughs than Moon Mist. Now, it's way harder. If you've never played an Infocom game, you're going to need to cheat. But you know what? We have now played 25 Infocom games, and I needed to cheat. There'll never be a point you don't need to cheat, so just accept it.
Yep, that's true. Yeah, I cheated. I kept my normal list.
I cheated on a couple things that I think everybody would have to cheat on.
Yeah, there was a couple things stuff that I'm like, I think everyone would have to cheat on. It's okay. It's all right. It's part
but
of the
But I didn't
game.
Cheat on some other ones, and the puzzles, there's some puzzles that are really good and that I really enjoyed and were very satisfying to complete.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In the words of Tiffany, Nito Peachy Keen.
Exactly. Ooh, I'm dead.
No, I'm dead. Oh, I learned a couple of words.
What did you learn?
I learned the word, you always know these words. You're much better read than I am.
Not necessarily.
I learned the word tropism.
Yeah, that's when animals or plants face like the sun or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Positive or negative response.
Was that in the game?
Yeah. Yes.
It must have been with the Venus flytrap.
Yes,
I guess.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Involuntary orientation by an organism that involves turning or curving by movement, and is positive or negative response to.
They say involuntary because they don't want to give plants agency. No,
right. This plant has agency. I will learn the word minaret, a tall, slender tower, typically of a mosque, having one or more balconies from which to summons to prayer. But in this game, it's just a very tall, thin tower that you can climb.
Yeah, but a minaret is more than just a tower. Like, it's that distinct shape of tower that has a little bulbous stuff in the middle. Like, it's distinctly... Think of like what a sultan would have, and it's not like so your typical downtown New York tower. It's the distinctly Arabian sort of feel tower with the bulbousness to it. So,
and a word I did not learn, but shout out because I have seen it before in Infocom games. The word balustrades comes up again, which I learned in Starcross, which is a fence.
Which is a fence. A spoiler fence.
A spoiler fence. And speaking of the spoiler fence.
Oh, we could have had a... We could have a spoiler balustrade instead.
Yes.
It's not a fence. It's a fun little spindly thing.
I really enjoyed this game. I have a few problems with it, but I have a few problems with everybody and everything, so...
Here's what's weird about this. Having finished it, I went on and I like to read some reviews. I'm back into keeping away from the digital antiquarian because he's just whatever he's written
is
going to influence me too. He's too good. I can't risk reading that before we record. But I like to go and read like contemporary reviews or just like kind of gloss over things. Yeah. Zork 3, which we just talked about, that neither of us really liked, has so many crazy over-the-top glowing reviews and fans out there. And I mostly read middling to negative reviews of this game. I find that very funny. That's very surprising to me. I think if you're a big fan of Infocom games, you're going to be a fan of this one. I don't understand how somebody can be a fan of Infocom games and then not like this one. I've got problems with some of this game, but I can see somebody saying, I don't like Infocom games, and therefore, I don't like this. But it's such a definitive one. I find it weird that people that really like Infocom games could be quite negative about this one. Like, you'd love Zork 3 and not like this one. I'm like, really? That's hard to get my head around.
I agree. Yeah.
That's it. That's what I got.
Okay. Good. Do you want to... I think you should pick the next game.
Ooh, yes, we get to pick a game.
Yeah.
I think we should do the third one in the Enchanter series.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Because I really like those two, and it's been ages since we played one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of, I don't know how many games we have left, but I know that's one of the ones we have left. Because we've done Enchanter and then Sorcerer, and isn't there a third one in that series?
Yes, Spellbreaker.
Spellbreaker. I think we should play Spellbreaker.
Great. I love that. That was one of my choices last time. We have two mysteries coming up, and I'm scared of them. I don't want to.
We could do one of those.
No.
We just had feedback that said the person solved the witness.
That's right.
Maybe we could do it. We could solve it.
We solved the witness. No, we solved deadline.
No, we did deadline. We didn't. We haven't done witness. And I've got witness is one of those ones that comes in a fancy folio. And I've got the folio and it's sealed. I have a sealed folio. And when we play that one, I'm going to sit on it. I'm going to break it. I'm going to wear it like a mask. Which is, what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. So we could want to do Witness instead and save Spellbreaker because we know we're going to like Spellbreaker and Witness maybe sucks.
Well, I'm not going to like it even if it's great because it's a mystery. But all right, fine. I should have kept my mouth shut.
No, let's do the Witness.
Okay. All right. We're going to do the Witness.
Excellent.
All right.
Hopefully it's very Sherlock Holmesy and I'll love it.
Great. Yay. God. All right, the next episode is not going to be until like June because I'm going to put off doing this game. Great. I shouldn't have said anything. We were gonna do the.
Well, but think of it this way: you'll get it out of the way, and you'll have of the maybe only eight. I don't even know how many games we have left after this. Then there'll be a higher percentage of ones that you're more likely to
okay.
like.
Okay, good.
We've got a couple coming up that are ones I've been hoping that we save because some of the ones I've most looked forward to playing. A Mind Forever Voyaging and The Lurking Horror
mm-hmm.
are the two that I'm most anxious to play. So I'm glad we've been kind of saving those. So.
Are we ready to hit the spoiler ballast?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Excellent.
We are ready to leap over it. Now, fortunately, that's the kind of fence you can see through easily. So, dear listener, don't look through the spindles of the balustrade. Once we're on the other side of the spoiler fence, then we are going to talk about the game in much more specific things. We're going to talk about specific puzzles, the ending. We're going to spoil stuff like crazy. So, if you haven't played this game and you think you might want to, and really you should, then don't listen past the spoiler fence. It's still going to be here. You can always come back to this episode at any point and listen to the last bit of the episode while we talk about the things in detail. If you have played the game or know you're never going to, then feel free to join us on the other side of the balustrade and we can talk about the finicky details and what we liked and didn't like. And I can talk about the bug that I found that only I have ever found, and it's almost certainly not true. And then take it from there. But meanwhile, if you are going to leave us for a bit, then thanks for listening so far. And next up will be The Witness, and we can see how long it takes us to cheat our way to a solution in that. Okay, spoiler fans.
Are they gone?
Leap. They're gone.
All right.
They're gone.
I have a thing. I need to talk about my thing. So, okay, you never played this game before, right?
I never played this game.
Okay, I would have told you the same thing. I had never played this game. I have played, and my list of games I had played before we started this podcast were Zork, Hitchhikers, Norden Burt, A Mind Forever Voyaging, and Planetfall. And one of the things I liked, like one of the few things I specifically remember about Norden Burt was
Norden Burt?
Norden Burt couldn't make head or tails of it. It's an Infocom game.
Head or tails or head nor tails? Head.
I don't know.
They couldn't make head nor tails.
Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it.
Well, that's just wrong.
Why?
Because could not make head. They could,
right.
Not or, head or tail. Head nor tail. Anyway, whatever.
Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it.
As a game that we are currently not reviewing.
Which we're not
reviewing. But I think we talk about it for a while.
It's a game that's kind of different and it's a lot of word puzzles and things.
I've just looked it up and I do recognize the cover. I've certainly never played it yet. That always struck me as not. I didn't think that was a text adventure.
It is. It's a text adventure. It's a little different, but it's got okay. But it's a lot of word puzzles and things. And one of the things I remember about Nordenberg was this great puzzle where there was a machine, and it was a tea remover machine.
No.
And
like in this.
Just bear with me. And there was a rabbit, and it was hilarious when you put the rabbit in there and it turns into a rabbi and it says a prayer and it runs off. And so when
are you mixing up these games?
Have I played this game before? Because this
or does it appear again in Nordenberg?
I guess
we'll find out.
I don't know. It was exactly how I remembered it. So either I have played Leather Goddesses before, which I really don't think I did, but I specifically remember this puzzle, which Infocom would not reuse a puzzle. They wouldn't do that. So
I don't think so.
Either they reuse this puzzle in a very non-Infocom way, or more likely, my memory is wrong, which I don't like. Maybe I once read a walkthrough of Leather Goddesses, and I was tickled by the tea remover rabbit rabbi thing, because I specifically remember solving that puzzle and finding it, just being tickled and just think it was a great puzzle, which it is, but it's in a completely different game. And when I saw the part, the components of this, I saw the rabbit and I saw the untangling cream, I knew exactly where it was going, and I was just like, how do I know this? This is in the wrong game. I'm completely baffled at this, and I know you can't help me, but I don't know. It's been killing me.
Well, it'll be interesting when we play Nordenberg then,
yeah,
to see if it does come up again. So now I'm interested. Oh, if I'd known that, we should have played that one next, but it is what it is. Okay, I liked the tea remover puzzle because it's kind of funny to stick the detangling stuff and make it de-angling cream, right, to change the angle. But I didn't like the angle stuff because it makes no darn sense. He changed his daughter into an angle? What's that even supposed to mean? It bugged me that one of the things you have to get is an 82 degree angle.
That's hilarious.
Do you mean a thing that is 82 degrees? Or just like the mathematical construct of an 82 degree angle?
Yeah.
It bugged me. It bugged me the whole game.
Funny.
And as soon as we encountered King Mitre, my notes even say, King Mitre. Okay, this is how we're going to get an 82 degree angle.
Sure.
Because he's Mitre instead of Midas. I'm like, okay. And then when I got the T remover, at least it was very clear. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put something in, and you play with it, and like, okay, it literally removes. And that's a pretty neat thing to have in a game where you can put stuff in it,
right,
and it gives you back the same thing without a T in the word. Change rabbit to rabbi, that kind of thing. So that's pretty funny. And so when I got the detangling cream, once I got that, I kept looking at everything I would get to see, does it have a T in,
right,
it? And so it's a good puzzle, and it's a solvable puzzle,
and
but it bugged me the whole finding an angle.
And you can put anything
an
with
thing.
A T in it, and sometimes it makes a nonsense word, but it says, like, you have a fluffle, whatever that is.
Yep, whatever, exactly.
Yeah.
The angle one bugged me. Like, you're going to have to get this angle. Because I keep thinking, do I have to get a thing with that angle? And it turns out, no, you got to get the angle. And King Mitre turns anything he touches into angles. And mostly 45, but he only grazed against her. So she's like 82. And the angle thing bugged me. That seemed, it could have done better.
I thought it was hilarious. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
That was okay,
a good puzzle. But yeah, all right.
I like it. And it is a good puzzle. Like, using the de-angling, like, I like the mechanics of the puzzle, getting the de-angling cream and,
right,
and putting it on the daughter so she now becomes straight again. But then, like, when you leave, he brushes against her and she's immediately 45.
Yeah, sad. I had trouble with that puzzle, however, because I couldn't. I knew I needed the machine. I couldn't find. I missed the room. It's kind of in a tangly little foresty area. You have to get to the back door where you can get the item that you need, the machine. And I missed it. I just never saw that room without having to kind of go back and cheat to find out where to go.
Okay.
It was just, had that before a couple of times where there's a perfectly obvious spot that you just sort of miss, where there's something important. So that was weird. It wasn't the game's fault. It was just me.
One of the puzzles I really liked and really didn't like was you get a painting of a cat. Of course, they don't call it a cat. They call it a pussy. So you get a painting of a pussy, but because they got to do blah, blah, blah. But it's a neat puzzle that you have to get this mouse. And the way you get it is you show it a painting of a cat and the mouse freezes in fear and then you grab it. Like that's a neat mechanic.
Yep.
You got to figure out that it's actually a painting of a cat because they keep calling it a painting of a pussy. And I was like, again, that's the pure all that stuff I didn't like as much. But I actually liked and I solved the puzzle on my own. I realized, wait, that's a cat. I can show the cat to the mouse and it worked. Mm-hmm. That's a fun, simple puzzle, but really rewarding when you do it. So such a simple puzzle and I really liked it.
Yes.
Weirdly. One puzzle I had to cheat on that I felt really bad afterwards. I can't believe I didn't figure that out. Was the whole covering the one hole with the trellis and then putting leaves on it to make like a trap for the Venus.
I figured that out all by myself. I'm so...
You are a smarty, and I did not. I kept going, like, I can do something, and in the comic, it talks about how, like, they're afraid of hissing and things, so I thought I'm going to have to use the cat for it, because when you do you get that cipher at the beginning.
You get a word search. Basically, you get a word search puzzle.
You get a word search puzzle, and if you cross out all the words that match the things, you know, blender and cotton balls and stuff, mm-hmm. you're left with hissing frightens fly traps. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay. And then I thought, well, it's because the cat, and I'm going to turn this painting into a real cat, and it will, I don't know. Like, I was led astray, and I never solved it. I end up just looking up in like a, like, just tell me how to solve this.
No, you've got
to
get the trellis, like, okay. And you've got to cover it with leaves. And then you have to lead the walking fly trap into the, and over the hole, which you put the trellis and leaves over the hole, and the fly trap pulls in.
Yeah, which is cool.
It's clever.
You solved it on your own. Well done, you, mister.
The other way to solve the puzzle is just to be in the room with the fly trap and type the word hiss. You just hiss at it, and it dies of fright.
I cannot believe that I should have got that because I got the hissing. I never even occurred to me to type hiss. I kept thinking I needed to get a cat to hiss at it.
Sorry.
That is sad. That is sad, me. Oh, you've made me sad.
Sorry.
Or you've revealed how sad I am. Now, one thing I did solve, I solved the body swap back to human from Gorilla, that whole thing. You get the mad scientist and he grabs you and throws you in the cage and throws the thing to turn you into and Tiffany into the gorilla bodies and stuff. And I figured out that it's chocolate that I eat. It gives me that sugar rush to be tough to bend the bar. So I figured I got to throw the chocolate in the thing before I get. And the whole thing of figuring out that the weird food is chocolate and that it'll make me strong as a gorilla and to throw it in the cage ahead of time so that I become a gorilla and I eat it and I open the bars and change myself back. It was a really rewarding puzzle. I was like, I solved it all on my own and I felt really good about it. So that was a good one. And neat. And it's so fitting for the theme. The whole mind-swapping mad scientist. It's a very fitting puzzle.
Yes. It was about that time that I was just like, I wonder if I'm going to be able to do this game without cheating. Because I solved that on my own. And I was just like, you know, I thought it was just about my level. And, you know, which these games have so many times have teased me that way. And I get 30% and I'm just like, all right, you're getting here. This is the one. This, you know, today's the day I stopped drinking, you know.
So were there, what did you end up having to cheat on?
I needed it. I felt stupid once I started looking. I couldn't get the headlight.
Interesting. Okay.
I tied the
from the 1934 Ford or whatever, or 33 Ford?
The headlight on the Ford, which is out a window, and you're in a bedroom, and you've got to get to it. And there was a sheet, so I tied the sheet to the bed, but it didn't reach out the window. And, you know, I look at the first hint, it was just like, seen any good prison escape movies? I'm just like, oh, of course, you know, just, you know.
Because it even says that when you do it in the thing, is, oh, you must have seen a lot of good prison escape movies. Right.
So I felt dumb.
But of course, then Tiffany immediately jumps down to do it and then gets run over.
Right. Yeah, she dies. I needed.
Oh, does she ever?
Yeah. I needed hints for the riddle, but I already talked about that. I don't like the riddles. How to get past the beam. Black circle at well bottom takes you to the royal. Oh, yeah.
That was a tough one. I had to look up that, though.
Yeah, I needed. It was a great thematic. I mean, I loved the setup for this puzzle where you're going down a barge, in a river, you know, thing, and there's a an energy beam that is focused into the river, and then when you go,
it past gives you a headache, and then you explode.
You get a tingle in your body, and then you've got maybe 20 moves before your headache kills you and you die because of the energy beam. And I mean, I really worked hard to try to get past that, and I needed to one of the black teleporting circles seems like it took you to a place, but really it took you to the barge, which was movable, so you could send the barge down the river without you in it, and it would go. It goes to where you need.
And you basically wait.
Yeah, you wait a while, and then you teleport to the barge, and it makes perfect sense. I wish I'd gotten that one.
Mm-hmm. I had to look up that one too. For some reason, even though I had used that and teleported myself on the barge, I remembered it as I teleported myself like to the barge, not on the barge. Like I'm at, like to the dock. I think I was thinking of it differently for some reason. And so I also had to look up on that one. Alas, boo.
The thing that I don't that I think is the unfair puzzle, and it was really my biggest problem with the gameplay. Is that at one point you're going down this barge, there are docks on simultaneously on the left and the east and the west banks. And
they got neat names.
They've got neat
names.
What's
a dock and
Hickory Dickory? At this point, one is the opulent dock and one is the abandoned dock, I think. But there's two docks. Normally you could stop at a dock and then continue down the river when you're done. At this one point, there's two docks that are at the same spot on the other opposite ends of the banks. And I believe, based on my reading of the hints, that once you stop at one of, by default, you will go to the right dock, I think the east dock. Once you go to one of the docks, you can't get to the other one in the barge. And therefore, if you don't go to the west dock, you can't win the game.
Right, which is ridiculous.
And there's no way to... it's ridiculous.
Because there's no way to know that.
There's no way to know it. And there's no way to... Yeah, and there's a raft in the game, which I don't remember how you get it, but...
I didn't like the raft. It's the burial chambers under the... Right. In the catacombs.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. Why is this here? This makes no sense. This is the...
Because one person was buried just with an inflatable life raft. Yeah, like, no, okay, I'll take the raft, but what the heck? Yeah.
So I tried to use the raft to get from one side to the other, and then there was also the vocabulary. It chose not to understand what I wanted. You know, just put the raft.
Because you can use the raft to get in the water.
Yeah, right. But then you can't get you can only go downriver. You can't go.
Unlike the barge, which you can control because it's got that whole
right.
Go with the flow button or turn on the power button or whatever.
So anyway, on the wrong side, if you end up on the wrong side of the river, you can't get to the right side of the river, and there's no way to know that you're screwed. And the game has become unwinnable, and there's really no hint to that. And that really bothered me, and I thought it was super unfair. Do you agree with me?
I'm with you. I do. Okay. I do. Okay. One of my notes is about the way that I found the map disjointed, like they throw things in. Another example of mixing this stuff is like at one point you get in your little teleporting circle and you end up in the hold of a starship.
Yeah.
And the other room that's available is a stable where you get on a mount a stallion and go. I'm like, what now? Like,
it's a horse on a spaceship. What's wrong with that?
Because it's a horse on a spaceship and it makes no sense. Like, why is the next room a stable? It's like, did you have a leftover thing from another game? You had already encoded it. You didn't want to change the name. It makes no sense that the next to the hold is a stable and you get you mount a stallion to go galloping off to the next part of it. It bugged me.
Okay.
Just saying. Bugged me.
Yeah. No, I get it. It was silly.
I can't believe I didn't think to type hiss. My goodness.
I'm sorry. So tell me about your bug.
Okay. So I played as a lady. You played as a lady.
Yeah.
And there was lots of little ciphers and stuff, which was neat. And you get this one cipher when you're going to go to the Sultan, or in our case, the Sultaness, because it all reverses the genders. Mm. You play as a guy, you'll go to the Sultan, and then you, and one of the things you're told is like, once you, like, as you know, but I'm telling the listener, just in case you haven't played, you sneak your way in through to the Sultan, and if you can solve the Sultan, or in our case, the Sultaness's riddle, and the riddle was like, what a thing, the answer to the riddle is this riddle, like a thing that you know kills you and has killed many and blah blah blah, and so it's the answer to the riddle is it's this riddle. So once you do that, you're given a reward of 1 hour with any of, if you play as a guy, any of the Sultan's wives. Yes. But then you're told through a little simple Caesar cipher you get, mm-hmm. that, and you know how to solve the Caesar cipher because of the thing in the comic book, although it's only a shift by three, so you can solve it easily.
Yeah, I try. I think you could just solve it like a cryptogram, right? I mean,
I just solved it like a cryptogram. I just solved it, and then I remembered. Hold on, they mentioned a cryptogram in the comic book. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a shift by three. It's exactly how I'm solving at the moment. Good to know I'm on the right track. So you solve it, and it's also reversed, and it says in the cipher, your mission is to contact wife number, and in my case, 8087. Mm-hmm. I think that number changes.
Yes.
But wife number 8087 of the Sultan, and get the secret map. Identify yourself to her by asking her to kiss your kneecaps. Also a weird thing to do, but you say, kiss my kneecaps. And says, here's the thing. I'm playing as a lady. The cipher always says that. It says your mission is to contact wife number 8087 of the Sultan. It should say
husband.
Because I'm contact husband number 8087 of the Sultaness, because that's who I actually get. It says I can go to any husband. I say I want 8087, and it's the Sultaness who says that. So they forgot to reverse the genders in the Caesar cipher paper you get. So, and I say that's an actual bug.
That seems like a bug. I didn't have that bug.
My,
yeah. Good job.
Oh, you didn't get the bug? Yours actually said husband?
Mine said husband of the Sultaness.
Oh, mine 100% said contact the wife number 8087 of the Sultan. Huh. So in the version I was playing, whatever that is, it's definitely a bug.
Interesting.
I felt so proud I found it too. I'm like, I mean, it's not a complicated bug. I just read it and noticed it was wrong.
Yeah,
but still,
I had a couple
for
of
me,
those,
that's good.
Those too. There was a thing where, let's see, the pterodactyl snatches you and Tiffany in midair and deposits you safely in another ruin. Sitting on the stone blocks is a large green frog. Something about it catches your eye. A few seconds later, you see Tiffany's elbow appear, followed almost immediately by the rest of her. Wait, you just said,
"Oh,
that
wait."
Tiffany was with me in the pterodactyl. So I thought that was weird. And also, after exiting the spaceship where with the tentacle porn monster, you're wearing a white suit, like a suit that protects you from the cold of space, right?
Yes. And yet you can still talk outside when you're in space.
Yeah,
but
sure. Yeah. You don't have a... What? I enjoyed going out into space without having to deal with airlocks.
Oh my gosh, yes. And just like, you know what? They just handle it. Yeah. Go outside and have a sword fight in space. I'm like, yes, I do want to go outside and have a sword fight in space.
Yeah, just have to deal with opening doors and... thank you. Anyway, the white suit after that scene disappears. Even if you're wearing it, just disappears.
Oh, I never thought of that. It does. It just goes away. You don't need it anymore, so it's just gone.
Yeah. But the whole thing of these games is you end up spending 3/4 of the game carrying around a thing you don't need, you know, because you might need it.
This is true.
So I just thought it was strange that it just disappeared, and it was very odd.
I like the fact that it never even occurred to me at the time, but I'm subsequently appreciating it. It was the case. Yeah, you can just, like, go outside, and there's, like, there's the dude getting all horned up by the space monster, and here's the lady assassin who you're going to sword fight. I liked that's the thing that I both liked and didn't like. Then I really liked that when you're fighting her.
you said horned up by the space monster.
but I like that when you're fighting the lady assassin, the way that you beat her is you just fight, but then she realizes, like, when you take her sword and you give it back, that you must be the good guy in this story, and therefore she has no chance of winning. I really like that, but then I didn't like that therefore she then, like, it doesn't say she just gives up and goes away, that she gores herself to death on her own sword. I'm like, I didn't want that. Why not just say, well, you win, you're clearly the good guy, right. I'm going to go away for the sequel. Could have done it that way instead.
Right.
So I didn't like that bit of writing. I thought that was not
fun. If you give her your sword, she kills you.
Oh, I never tried doing that.
Yeah, she's just like, you're an idiot. She kills you. If you give her sword, then she kills herself.
So. Oh, yeah, I totally just gave her back her sword.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. A lot of this game was random, and it bothered me. I think bothered me less than it seemed to bother you. That those bits of randomness, I'm just like, okay, this is silly. So I just went with it.
But it's also a silly game. Like, a lot of the silliness, I was just okay with.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, it's silly.
Yeah. So that's everything I cheated, which is a relatively short list. You had said at one point in texting or how we were communicating on Twitter that you thought this was, at the time, you said this seemed like a short game, like a relatively easy one. Do you still agree with yourself on that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, a lot of turns. Like, when I look at my final, when I look at my like death restarts,
yeah.
I got one at 8 turns, 229, 337, 445, and then at 525 was my final one, 525 turns. Oh, we should talk about the scores. It's funny how it's out of, we'll make up a number of points.
Yeah.
And I finished it in only two sittings. Mm. One long one, and then one short one last night. So in number of, like, total number of hours, like, way fewer than most games. Mm. And I cheated, but I didn't cheat more than I usually do.
I think you...
Maybe I jumped to the cheating quicker.
Huh. This is a good length of a game for me. Some of them seem like gruelingly long, and this didn't. But I spent, I think, longer time than you did.
I spent way longer on Zork 3. Holy cow. Oh, Zork 3, there was one puzzle I spent like 2.5 weeks on. Just the one puzzle.
And I went on an airplane ride, and I was on a vacation, or just sitting around a lot, and I played the game for a couple of days, so plus, I don't know, I felt like it was a good length for me. I maybe on a little short side, but I mean, the number of rooms and stuff, it was about the same. So, I don't know. I liked that the puzzles varied. Some of them were quite tricky, and some of them weren't. I mean, some of them was just like, I could see that there's a puzzle here, but man, it didn't bend your mind. It's like, oh, there's a white circle instead of a black circle. Just pour the paint into it. Problem solved, And it was just like,
exactly.
It was nice.
It was a good solution, though.
Yes. It was nice to just have some little problems rather than giant puzzles,
Oh, and the frog puzzle, too. The frog puzzle was very much like the Babelfish puzzle in Hitchhikers, where it basically tells you what you need to do.
Yeah.
You just have to do it. It says, like, you go to kiss the frog, it goes, oh, no, you don't like the look of it. So I'm like, okay, close my eyes. Oh, wait, you don't like the smell of it. I'm like, or no, it ribbits. So I'm like, okay, so hold my ears, try it again. Oh, wait, no, now you don't like the smell. I'm like, okay, I will come back to you, frog. But then you get the clothespin. I'm like, okay, now I think I can do this. Clothespin on the nose, close my eyes, close my ears. And so it walks you through the puzzle, mm-hmm. but it's a satisfying puzzle. It's weird to then get a blender from it or whatever. But yeah, I like the fact that you kiss the frog and it tells you what to do. And that's not a difficult puzzle, but it's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hard part was finding the clothespin.
It was totally was that one pin left. Yep.
Yep.
I liked how, like, in the first time I died in only 8 turns, so I don't know how I died that quickly, but my goodness. It says, in 8 turns, you have achieved a score of, 2 out of 308 points, or no, 1,308 points. Mm-hmm. This gives you a rank of Sandusky Stable Hand. And at first I thought it was like the scores I was getting was some number out of a random number, but clearly, like, the number of as your number of points goes up, the number of points it's out of goes down.
Yes.
And so that was neat, because then I got 156 out of 364, then 177 out of 331, 268 out of 324, and then finally 313 out of 313. Odd number. 7 points total for Zork 3 was weird, mm-hmm. and 313 points is also weird.
So I got, in 902 turns, you have achieved a score of, 354 out of 354 points. This gives you the rank of Interplanetary Empress. So
what? I did not finish it. That's why this game was so quick.
The total number of finishing points is random, semi-random.
Okay, I was like, darn it, I missed some stuff.
No, you didn't miss a thing.
Okay.
It's just that it's... Anyway, but I still did better than you because I got a higher score.
Yeah, I did better than you because I did it in 525 turns.
Yeah. Oh, you did.
How did you do that many turns? No, the thing is... No, yeah, I shouldn't say that. I take that back. My gatekeeping. Bad Carrington. when I play these games all the time, I save frequently. And so I'll try something and it doesn't work and I, whatever. And it, but once something does work, I'll generally reload my last save and then do that again in a few number of steps, because I'm always afraid I'm going to run out of steps or run out of torchlight or whatever. So it's just a habit of mine. So 525, probably the game can only be done in 400 turns or whatever. Like I generally, right. My number of turns is relatively maximized because I min-max that way. I don't know why. It's a weird habit I've gotten into.
No, I get that, because sometimes you've got a flashlight that's going to go out and you need to make sure that you're doing things in the minimum number of turns, because when you get to the 800th move, your flashlight's going to go out. And this game had a flashlight. Is it going to go out? I don't know. It didn't. But.
Yes, exactly, because it was a reliable light or whatever. Right. So, excellent. I like that about it. I like how at one point, though, it says it's not as bright as it was before, and I freaked out about it and whatever, but I think it just lasts. At least that one, I think, did. I liked the ranks that I got. So I got Sandusky Stablehand, Marchioness of McKeepsport, the Duchess of Detroit. My favorite one I got at, when I got 268 points out of 324, gave me the rank of King of Queen of Prussia. So I thought that was good. I got the Queen of King of Prussia. That's it, because King of Prussia is a place. So the Queen of King of Prussia. Right. And then I too got Interplanetary Emperor as my final one. So.
Nice.
I liked it. I liked the game. I enjoyed the game very much.
I wanted the point. You said that you solved the cipher, the Caesar cipher by hand. I tweeted about this, but I wrote a basic program to do it. I've been doing the annual 10-line basic programming contest, and so I had my Atari emulator up, so I wrote a little program just to do the work for me. It was probably way more effort to write the program than to actually do it.
Yeah, if I was going to have someone do it for me, I would probably just Google cipher and it would hit me. I'm not sure I could paste that into a website that would do it for me. But it's fun. It's fun to do a thing like that by hand. There must be a translator that does ciphers.
Probably.
Yeah, but that kind of thing, when since it's just a shift by three characters, it was like, oh, okay, I can work this out. It's just kind of like I'm in that kind of mindset when I'm playing these games. So it's like, okay, then I'll just count this as a puzzle and I'll do it.
Yeah. I had the problem with this game that I've had with many Infocom games where it doesn't spell out the order that you need to do things. And yet there's many things to be done. So it's hard to know.
A lot of things to be done. And you do have to do some things in certain
orders. Yes, absolutely. You don't have the clothespin, so you can't, solve the certain
thing. And you won't know that you don't have the thing to solve.
So there's a lot of just like, am I not solving this because I'm stupid or because I don't have all the tools I need?
And I generally just assume it's I don't have the tools. I'll try something. I'm like, I'll wander around. What else have I got to work on? I got maybe. And then once I get a new object, I then go revisit all the puzzles that I know about and see if this object be applied to this puzzle.
Yeah,
I liked it though. I really enjoyed this game. I'm very glad we played it. This is an example of the kind of thing I was hoping to get out of doing this podcast.
This
was a good one.
This was a good game.
Good game.
Really, this is, like I said, this is 90% of what I look for in an Infocom game, and I don't know 100% is possible, but I had fun. I had fun playing this game, and that's all I can ask for.
Crap. Okay, so I think we're good. Okay. We're gonna move on to the witness next.
Yeah.
Well, then I will wrap things up by saying, that's so funny, poor guy. This has been Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast. If you want to, you can send us email. You can email us at Gru, that's GRUE, at monsterfeet.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington, and we will gladly
make sure that you don't get horned up by a space monster.
Yes, we will make sure you don't get horned up by a space tentacle monster if you give us a nice review in iTunes, which helps other people. You know what? I don't even know if it helps other people find the podcast. You know what? Give us a review if you want to. I love it because it feeds our ego. Give us a review on iTunes because it feeds our ego. I don't really care if other people find the podcast. You're listening. We're all in it together. Yeah. We're having fun. We don't need other people to join us. We're good.
No, in fact, don't tell them. This is just for us.
Give us a bad review. Don't give us a bad review. I've taken it too far. Don't give us a bad review in pod. But whatever. Email us. It's nice to hear from you. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for playing it on lewd and letting us use his song as our theme tune.
But in a good way.
Thank you for podcasting with me.
Thank you for podcasting with me.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Oh, my poor throat. My poor Canadian throat.